G'day and welcome to the Pod Pod. It's your boy Dossie here talking all things AFL fantasy this Wednesday morning, December 27th, 2023. Hope you've all had a fantastic holiday season. But we thought we'd just escape the families for just a little bit to talk some fantasy footy with our good mates, the Pod Squad. Joining the chat today, we have two-time top 10 finishers in Kyle Holmes and John Harmy. I'll start with you, Holmesy. Good Christmas, mate.
Yeah, not too bad, Dossie boy. Always good to spend a bit of time with the family and, yeah, back to it now and looking forward to starting to really dive into this preseason with the new year and moving on.
A couple cheeky checks of the phone over the break, mate, just to update the fantasy squad at all?
Team's actually pretty set, so I'm sure there'll be an injury in the next week or so. So every time I think that it's looking good, something happens. So no fantasy Friday, over the Christmas break, Dossie.
Yeah, so Harmy, your team's set as well, just like Holmesy reckons his squad's done for the year. He's ready to go, mate. Ready for
Done, Holmesy.
March to come around.
Paddy Dow.
No, mate.
Paddy Dow, Thompson Dow, M1, M2. What else do you need?
I'm far from it, Dossie boy. I have been flicking a few things around because I'm still battling with this bloody forward line and back line, to be fair.
Yeah, it's a tough time in the world of fantasy looking at those two lines. But look, this show is all about a bit of fun. Obviously, we don't have Lou or the Statesman on this one, but we wanted to touch on a few early, and we are early, obviously late December still. So if you're listening to this a little bit later, look, these points of difference may not be points of difference anymore, but that's what we're looking at. Low ownership players that could be great starting picks in your team. So, I mean, by the time round one's rolling around, or should I say opening round, these guys are probably owned by majority of the competition if we've got our predictions anywhere right here. But we're going to be talking about some guys that we think could be options in your team that may be a little bit surprisingly low ownership, or even some of those studs that are looking at low ownership that maybe you could get a jump on the competition. But first of all, I want to get to some hot topics since we last left you, which it's been about 20 odd days since our last podcast. Lots has happened. Just at our last podcast, the game hadn't quite been released yet, if memory serves, but they had announced what the rules were going to be heading into the year. Obviously, that opening round's not going to count, that we're going to start at round one. And we had some very early takes on what we thought. I think the consensus was that we were all pretty happy with the way that the fantasy format had played out. But since then, I think maybe we've thought a bit more about those strategies that we, you know, were brainstorming on the spot in that podcast. And I kind of want to just go around the show now, and we'll start with you, Holmesy. Like, have your thoughts changed since that show? Maybe recap your thoughts and you know, what you're thinking about now with these extra buy rounds early on, what you're doing with those sort of players and how your structure is sort of shaping up since that show.
Yeah, well, one thing that wasn't clear when we were talking about that show is how that initial price rise was going to be, but it's since sort of been, well, I'm pretty sure confirmed that those players that play in round zero will get that double price rise after round one. So the break evens will change from that round zero game, which means that, you know, your rookies and mid prices from those round zero teams are going to be quite valuable if they're having that extra price rise. So someone like a Kitty Coleman that we thought maybe we'd be able to wait on if he's only going to have that one price rise, well, it's actually going to be two price rises. So, you know, rather than jumping potentially 40 to 50K, maybe he jumps 80K in those 2 weeks. And if you do wait, you might be a little bit behind the pack. So still in the camp that you probably need to not start any Uber premiums from those at least round two or three buy teams. But yeah, with your value players, your mid prices and your rookies, there's definitely scope to start them. And even your round five or round six buy players, if they are mid prices, there's plenty of price rises between the start and their buy that you can even trade them at their buy and get up maybe on an early upgrade.
Yeah, those are some good takes and something that wasn't 100% clear last time when we were chatting on the show. Harmy, have you got any different takes, or are you on the same board as Holmesy there?
Yeah, similar to Kyle. I'm probably looking to avoid anybody who's I don't know what you say, 800,000 or higher that have those early buys. So I'm pretty keen. So people like Sam Walsh, who I do like as an option, I'm trying to get him out of my team at this point in time. So, yeah, that's probably one thing. And, yeah, just something else that we spoke about before was the mid-prices may not mean as much this year, given you got best 18 for a lot of those early rounds as well.
Mm. Yeah, I think similar thoughts from me, really. Not too dissimilar, but still just looking to minimize any of those players. Aside from, yeah, maybe the thing that has changed a little bit is thinking a bit more about those mid prices that you mentioned, like your Kitty Commons, or I suppose even a Taylor Adams. I mean, he's got like five, you know, you've got five rounds to play with there with the Sydney players, where you can sort of get a few price rises and it might be worth it, Kyle.
So, Harmy, if the mid prices aren't going to be as important this year for best 18, who are you going to pick in your forward line? Six rookies?
Yeah, if you got six available, maybe. Like, yeah, there should be a few in the forward line, so I guess we'll see how many get named round one.
Aaron Cadman, baby. Get around him. Although, yeah, I suppose he's got the early buy as well. All right, let's get into our points of difference. So I think it's probably the interesting thing about the points of difference at the moment as well is that at this time of year, you don't have your full list of fantasy players that are going to be playing the game. I mean, I don't know what numbers we're at in terms of registrations, but you know, this would be the hardcore players that are registered already at the moment. So I feel like a lot of the ownership numbers right now are pretty indicative of where maybe the more experienced coaches or those top end coaches are kind of looking at. And some of those points of difference maybe are sort of like players that aren't being talked about much in the fantasy ether, but that may rise when your sort of more casual player jumps on board, and maybe some of those players with new colours, you know, new team colours and stuff rise up a bit as well. And we also see a massive change in the ownership numbers after round one, when those auto-generated teams, like if you don't have your full squad in, generally the opening, I don't want to say opening round anymore, but generally the first game of the season, that's when they all just get auto-filled as well. So I think typically it's the Carlton-Richmond game. So you see a lot of Carlton and Richmond players with high ownership that probably wouldn't actually be as high given the auto-generated teams that go in. But this will be interesting anyway, and the way I wanted to do it was just in three separate categories, and I did throw this in late, so hopefully we can sort of put them as best we can under these categories. I've gone with established gun points of difference. So these are players that you know their names, they've been around the fantasy game for a long time, and perhaps it's strange that, you know, we've noticed that their ownership is low, or maybe there's a reason that they're low, but there's the established guns. Then we're going to go into surprisingly potty pods. So these are players that, you know, maybe have been talked about in fantasy circles or in AFL circles, like, you know, during trade period, but then are suddenly, you know, surprisingly low ownership despite the being talked about. And then last but not least, the under the radar pods. So these are maybe guys that we've got our eyes on that aren't quite yet in the mainstream, but that may rise as their form kind of comes to light in the preseason. Let's get started with our established gun pods, though, and I'll let you do the honors, Holmesy. Do you want to kick us off with one of those established guns you've noticed with low ownership?
Yeah, no worries, Dossie, and I'm sure Louis probably would have had a crack at this one if he was here, so apologies, Lou, but I'm going to start with a player who has left a pretty sour taste in some coaches' mouths, especially for draft. He wasn't very classic relevant last year. But he has fallen off the map. He is currently at 1.08%, and that is Ollie Wines. So, real bad taste in the mouth from last year, but if we actually have a look at his data, okay, last year was his lowest season since his rookie year. And outside of that, he's had 9 seasons above 93, priced at 77. So, he had a horrendous preseason last year. I think he had knee surgery in the offseason. He wasn't able to train until pretty much right up before round one, and it showed. So he had a real drop-off season. He even found himself out of the midfield. So it's a definite preseason watch, but from all reports from Lou and what we're hearing from Port Adelaide, He's had a full preseason. He has lost weight. He's hit the ground ready to go, and he should be back in that midfield. So if he's good and he's in there, Rosie and Butters are going to get all the attention. And if he's that M3, I see potential for a 90 plus, and potentially there's a little bit of value there. So,
Well, that's the issue, though, isn't it? Is he the M3? Like when he was on fire a couple of years ago, he was the M1. And I reckon that they prefer Horne Francis in there ahead of him. So he's equal with Willem Drew as the M4/5.
Just quickly, before we get stuck into the weeds, I just want to say, Holmesy, we can't say a full preseason. He's had a full preseason. There's been like a month. It's been like a month. He's got 3 months left to get through. But
full preseason, yes, to this point, Dossie boy. Fair enough. This point in
time. Yeah, look, Louis, just to pull back the curtains a bit as well, Lou already has exited our group chat once this preseason based on a heated debate about Ollie Wines that I chimed in on. So I guess, yeah, I was on the other camp. I just thought guys in his mold, we've seen sort of players in that ilk, a bit slower midfielder, a bit bulkier, slower mids that are more the clearance players, just kind of getting left a little bit behind in this new kind of fast-paced AFL. I don't want to say fully because, you know, still guys like Patrick Cripps are probably a similar mold and he had a massive impact last year, but not necessarily. Well, I mean, he started off the gates massively in fantasy footy. So I'm just looking at his centre bounce numbers though, and given he obviously had that bad start to the season, but he built some form. And at the end of the year, though, Holmesy, you know, he was getting in round 19, 17% centre bounces, 32, 31, like even in the final series, 38%, 21%. Do you just think he's going to, you know, really lift his form this preseason to get back in that mix? Like Harmy said, he's looking at he's not even probably third on the list. He's probably fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and that's it, Doss. Like I said, it is a big preseason watch to see what his, you know, health and fitness is and what his role is. I just don't think we can ignore the 9 years of 92 plus previously to this season. Like, the bloke's a gun. He's won a Brownlow. Yes, all your points are correct in terms of those slower midfielders have been sort of moved past, but it's just a definite watch, and I think there's going to be value there if he can get his body right, because I think he does have a bit of a point to prove.
Let's move on, Dossie. Lou and Holmesy got him and we don't.
Yep. I think by that merit, though, we should all start Jared Lyons as well for a comeback season as well in the Ollie Wines mold. No, Harmy, take it away next, mate. And sorry, well, Lou, because Lou would have gone way harder. I think he's pretty keen on Wines. So
he is, all this, Lou. All right, established guns. Well, one that I'm warming towards – and he's only just getting back into training now because he had his concussion stuff. But Angus Brayshaw, he has ownership of 1.7% as a defender, priced at 85, and with some personal medical issues at Melbourne's midfield, I reckon he might be a good chance to bump up a spot. And you've got to also bear in mind that Melbourne have done away with Harms and Jordan, who also got a bit of a chop out in there. So I just feel like his CBAs may increase. You know, I don't know how, can't remember how old he is, 27 maybe? And he's still got a few years ahead of him too. So I think that he's probably a good shout at the minute I'm watching him.
Fresh off the 100-100s on the famous 100-100s on Christmas Day. Holmesy, I did see you almost dare I say, cringe at the thought of Angus Brayshaw just here. We do have the video platform now on YouTube. Of course, go subscribe on there. But Holmesy, the people would be able to see that cringe. What was with that for Angus Brayshaw?
Oh, I just can't believe how hard Harmy just went at me for an Ollie Wines call when he's spruiking in an Angus Brayshaw that's, you know, one slightly misguided tackle away from retirement. We love the bloke, but it's pretty risky starting a bloke with his concussion history, no?
Don't think he missed a regular season game, did he? I have to look at that.
Yeah, I don't know. I love a fully fit Angus Brayshaw in the right role. I always have. I just think you're right. There's a lot of players that have left Melbourne and there's definitely a spot open in that midfield. I'm just not sure whether that'll be Angus Brayshaw. We need him to start pretty hot and I'm not sure he's going to be fully fit to start the season with everything he's gone through, but could be wrong.
He just did 100-100s 2 days ago.
Are you sure, mate? We've just seen a photo on Instagram. Is Instagram reality, mate? He might have just jumped in for the photo.
Yeah, look, just looking at his numbers last year, though, Harmy's right, and he became more of that midfield presence, I guess, when Oliver went down. So I guess that's another question heading into this preseason or heading into this season coming up in 2024, what Clayton Oliver's sort of presence is going to be like in that team, and you know, that would really open up a slot if he's out of the mix early. But we obviously hope Oliver is firmly in the mix, but just a few things going on there still, and to your point, a few players exiting the club. So there is room in that midfield. It's just whether or not it's him or someone like a Tom Sparrow or even someone else that we might be talking about a little bit later on that that takes up the bulk of those midfield minutes. I'll get on to my one first. I might just do a two-pronged approach here. Now, when I went established guns, I went even guys that have performed well recently that you still might want to start and still have maybe that little bit upside, or maybe you just want to chuck on the captaincy. So Jaden Short I had. So two Richmond guys I'll go with. Jaden Short at 2.55% at the moment. He missed some games last year, which isn't usually like Jaden Short. Got the new coach who apparently loves his offensive footy. I think, look, it's going to be a perfect game plan for Short. That's something to just watch, is that game plan that Uze implements. But the other guy is Tim Taranto, who was in basically all of our teams last year as a forward. He's now a mid only, but he's at 3.43% at the moment. So either of those two guys tickle your fancy there as points of difference, thinking, you know, of the new Richmond game plan, potential for some upside. I know Tim Taranto, you're probably paying for what you get, but maybe a captain option, Holmesy.
Yeah, Tim Taranto's interesting, isn't he? I mean, he started like a house on fire. I think it was a 120 plus average for a large chunk of the season, but then, you know, finished the back half with a mid-90s average. So I'm not sure you could pay a 113 price tag for someone that has the potential to do that. You know, did it coincide with Hopper coming back into the team? Who really knows? Did he have a niggle? You can't argue with the start of his year. I'd be a little bit worried. But in saying that, that Richmond midfield is essentially Taranto, Hopper and no one else, maybe a bit of Dusty. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of ball and a lot will rely on him. I just think, you know, a 113 price tag is pretty massive.
What about you, Harmy? Do you think we just have to keep an eye on the game plan? Because obviously it's a new coach, it's a completely different system potentially. It sounds like it's a very different system to what we saw last year. Will you just be keeping your eye on this? Because, you know, those could be some juicy pods, especially if Taranto comes out the gates like he did last year.
I like the idea of Jaden Short, but I just don't know. Like, I'm not sure what role he's going to be playing, whether he actually has a spot in that midfield or if he's on the back flank, which is probably preferable, really. Yeah. But, look, I'm a bit uncertain, and they've got the bye early, I think. I'll check that.
I think it's round six, Harmy. I think they got the bye in round six.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe, yeah. You know, just with a few defender issues. But I'm more keen on Short than Taranto, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and what I will say as well is I think for the purpose of this pods thing, obviously opening round there's what? Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Carlton, Suns, Richmond, Giants and Collingwood. Pending how the players score and stuff is obviously going to change if you're going to pick them or not, and their ownership's going to change drastically. But for this purpose, we're just going to look at players of all the teams. I think it's not going to really matter if they're playing opening round or not here for us for the purpose of this discussion. But all right, let's get on to another player. Holmesy, who have you got? Are we still going established guns? I've probably got one more I want to talk about, if not.
I've got one more.
Okay. Yeah, you jump in, Harmy.
I was going to say someone who has done it before and is tracking pretty well after missing the majority of last season's Cam Guthrie. So his ownership's 2.4%, priced at 87, I think. But in 2022, he went at 96. In 2021, he went at 110. And the other thing with him is no early buy. So he'll play through. Same as another Geelong player I got after, so it makes me more interested. But I don't have him in there at the moment, but somebody who's worth a look. He could be the number one midfielder at the Cats too, because who else is there? Blicks?
That midfield
danger?
Mix is, yeah, that midfield mix at the Cats is an interesting one.
Yeah, I don't mind it, Harmy. The one thing that's always been a little bit of a worry about Guthrie is his time on ground. He's always been sort of an impact player. And his really big fantasy numbers came in 2019 and 2020 when Geelong really played that chip-chip style, and we have seen them speed up a lot recently, and that's sort of coincided with, you know, sort of Mitch Duncan falling away as well. He's obviously a lot older too, but they don't really play that chip style. So there's probably value at his 87, and he probably will be the M1, but I'm not sure there's going to be, you know, 100 plus value that we sort of need from that price point, but definitely one to watch. I like it.
All right, and the last player for me in the established guns category, Tom Stewart at 9.9%, 96 average last year. I like the St. Kilda matchup out the gate. You mentioned it, Harmy. He's gonna come and play all the games. No early buy to worry about. I've just gone, you know, established gun that's 9.9%. Bit surprising for me at this time of year. I think maybe it's just given that everyone's got at D1 at the moment. It seems like a pretty hefty call to go with a Nick Dacos kind of vibe there, which probably is unsurprising. Holmesy?
Nope.
Are you ready to be hurt again, Harmy, like we were last year ahead of the pack with that 14 that we copped in round one?
Oh, that was shit. I'll give you another one, right? This is if we're moving on to the next category, Dossie, you'll like this. The surprising pods, Jack Bowes.
Yep.
Oh, no, he's probably in your under-the-radar pods. But a Geelong defender, because he got 10, didn't he? He had a 10 and he had a 9 last year in his scores.
Yep. Well, I had him in surprisingly potty as well, to be honest.
Wasn't that
0.5% ownership?
Yeah.
Wasn't that Dossie's downgrade from Sam Doherty, like for like?
It was. It was last year. Yeah, look, as you said, injury and sub-affected games. I don't know if you're trolling there, Harmy, but look, I'm actually surprised he is that low ownership given you've got guys. Look, granted, he's probably 100K cheaper, but a guy like Zach Williams who's just been injured and injured and injured and injured. Jack Bowes has done it. You know, he's been injured this time, but I feel like he's in a side that kind of needs him more than Carlton needs Zach Williams. They've just gone, you know, nearly all the way without him, whereas Geelong kind of just need veteran bodies back there or even through the midfield. As you've said, there's not really many people throwing their hands up. He's shown to be a defender and a midfielder and is pretty cheap.
Yeah, no, I'm actually quite interested.
All right. Let's keep a preseason eye on that 0.5% for Jack Bowes. But this is our second category of pods. So surprisingly, potty pods. Guys, perhaps being talked about but still lowly owned. Oh, I'm going to have to get in there before anyone else does. Paddy Dow. Paddy Dow, still that low ownership. What's his actual ownership? I didn't even write it down. I just know it's low.
6.6%.
6.6%. Now, I think the issue here, and I don't know if it's a tactic just to keep him under wraps, but not much media since the initial spruiking of the arrival at Arden Street, or is that North? I don't know. Wherever he's playing, St. Kilda. I can't remember the actual
Melbourne. Moorabbin.
Moorabbin. Yeah. Sorry, Victorian folks. Getting that wrong. Where St. Kilda need to put more stuff of Paddy Dow out there, or, Holmesy, is his preseason been a bit underwhelming that they don't want to get the shredded photos, or are they just keeping it under wraps until he explodes round one?
Well, Dossie, I'm not sure, mate, because I'm not inside the four walls, but if I had to guess, what is it, 7 preseasons now of being underwhelming? Maybe there's just been an 8th preseason being underwhelming, but nah. Do we think he's M3? Do we think he's M3 behind Steele and Crouch?
This is what I was going to go to. So I reckon Jack Steele is the number one mid there comfortably, even though he's a bit of a limited preseason, but he's number one. Crouch, even though he's not training properly, is probably still number two. Then you go to Dow, Hunter Clark, Zach Jones, Seb Ross, with a bit of Windhager and Sinclair, but they don't even do that much when you look at the CBA. So I reckon there's a spot there, and Dow or Zach Jones is probably going to run with it. And Zach Jones is 0.5% ownership too, price the same. So, yeah, I think I'm watching that one because I think that one of those guys is probably a good starting player.
What I will say, and I found this very surprising, but our good mate at the Draft Doctors, Steve Fizz, did one of his epic solo pods. I think it was in October or November, and he did the centre bounce win rate for all of the players in the comp, and Dow actually came in at the highest percentage win rate in the entire AFL.
Not surprising.
Yeah, look, if he had forward status, we would be looking at this a hell of a lot more. As a mid only, it's always going to be tough because you do really need him to sort of push that 90 range to be, you know, a smash picking and competitive and someone we can hold for a long time. So it is going to be hard for him to go 90 having never done it before, but you can't argue his value. You can't argue that there's probably a spot for him and he just needs to take it. I just am a little bit cagey about where he'll end up and if he is going to be close enough. But Dossie, I can't wait for you to find a way to put him into every single podcast we have between now and round zero, just to make sure that we all know.
Oh, wait.
Are you going to pick him? That's the question. Are you going to put your money where your mouth is?
Yeah, like, yeah, I think I will. It's just I need something from the media team at the Saints. Like, I feel like Ross has been like, look, he is our greatest weapon. We need to keep this under wraps from the opposition club so that they don't tack on early and there's a tag round one. But, yeah, look, I need something to tell me that, yes, he's actually firmly in the mix there. And I need maybe even Ross himself to just come out and say he's our guy. We're going to love seeing him play this year. But, yeah, look, Paddy's got some great upside. We all know that. But 6% ownership's pretty low, I would have thought, for a guy that seemingly has had a lot of talk this preseason. All right, who's going next? Holmesy, give us a surprisingly potty pod.
Yeah, so this one's interesting again. I'm not surprised that he's that low because he's had a couple of injury-affected years. Once again, he's got a bit of a bad taste in our mouths. But I'm going to go with Jack Billings. Now, he's been a top 10 forward in the past, and I'm not saying he's going to be a top 10 forward. I don't think he's going to have that same fruitful wing role that he's had at St Kilda, and Melbourne don't play that chip style as much as, you know, St Kilda have done in the days. But the fact that he's priced at 59, we don't need him to be a top 10 forward. If he goes 85 plus, then he's going to be someone that we can keep for a large part of the season, considering the lack of forward options that we have at this current time. And even if he goes 80 plus, he's still going to be a pretty good cash generator for us to get him up to someone else. So although he only played three games last year, which is why he's so cheap, and he only played eight games in 2022, there was two injury games. And then there was one stinker. But other than that, he scores in the 90s. And he's had years of 98, 94, 85. 2020 was 75, but that's COVID. So that's more like a mid to high 90. So we know this guy can score. Yes, we don't know what his role is. So caveat with all these players is we need to have a look in the preseason to see what their role is in the new team. But if he has that high half forward, even a wing role at times, and he can push 80, I think he's going to be a pretty good pick for us, priced at 59. So he's one I'm definitely tracking. I know some other coaches aren't really keen at all, but we do forget how good this guy has been. He was a high draft pick. You know, it's infamously taken one pick before Bont. So well done, St Kilda. But yeah, I just think there's potential there if he has a decent role at a new club.
What role do you think he'll play there, Harmy? And could you see yourself picking him? I know pre-show we were having a little bit of a chat about that. And even when your Angus Brayshaw thoughts came up, we're like, well, is there room for a Billings, a bit of inside mid there? But, you know, what do you think?
Well, think of it this way. This is the way I look at it. He's not going to run on the wing. Last year he was fit at the end of the season and couldn't get a game for St Kilda. So I'd say his role is a bit of forward flank and a bit of VFL at the moment.
Wow. Okay. 92 average in the VFL from eight games, by the way, last year, Jack Billings. Not that that matters, but he's an interesting name. He's an interesting name nonetheless. We've seen him do it in the past, as Holmesy said, but yeah, he's probably
there was something else going on there, Harmy. We saw Sam Flanders not be able to get a look in, and yes, Flanders' numbers in the VFL were monstrous, so can't quite compare that, but we never know what was going on behind the four walls. Like I said, maybe they knew he was leaving and he wasn't, you know, putting in as much effort as he could, and we know what Ross is like. So I'm just monitoring it. You know, just with the lack of forwards we have this year, I think that presents an opportunity for someone in that price range to get close enough to, you know, the top 6 to 10 forwards.
Yeah, you might be right, mate. I'm just saying there's a bit of risk there. So maybe just leave me out of that one.
Surprisingly potty pod, Harmy.
Ooh, surprisingly potty pod. How about Jai Simpkin from North Melbourne? 4% ownership, priced at 76. He had two sub games last year. One of those was a 7-point game, and he was 20 points down on his average from both 2022 and 2021. So could present some value there. And having a look at the North midfield, LDU would be their number one, I would expect, but then at the end of the season, it was Simpkin and Taron Thomas. So what changes, you know? Is he underpriced based on those injuries and he's not too bad of value?
Do you think, like, with their additional talent, is he going to be – because I know the year before that as well, Simpkin was – you know, it was him and LDU again, like you said. The year before, though, I mean, even in the early rounds, I think last year, Simpkin, when he was going, he was like 90%+ inside mid kind of centre bounce numbers. Do you still see that happening with the fact, you know, Wardlaw's on the rise? Are they going to bring the draftees straight a little bit of, you know, exposure to the midfield time? Or do you just see Simpkin as, you know, established top end sort of centre bounce numbers and really inside mid, pure inside mid?
Yeah, maybe not. I was just trying to bring up some of those stats from last year. But you've got to think, if he's had two injuries throughout the course of the season, he's probably not 100% throughout the whole year anyway. Mm. Let's have a look. Round 24, 123. Round 21, 105. I'd say the scoring potential is still there. Round 10 against the Swans, 115. So, yeah, I'm not convinced that he's washed because what is he? 25.
Look, I'm looking at last. So 2023, he had 60% centre bounce attendances, and we know like a lot's been made of centre bounce attendances and what they mean for fantasy scoring the last couple of years. But I'm just looking at him playing as a midfielder and getting the opportunity to score 60% in 2023, 83% and number one for North the year before. So does he return to being the number one guy? I mean, LDU, I think, now is definitely going to be the number one guy, but can he be on par with LDU? Then they rotate the Wardlaws, maybe even a Sheasel. Who's the new guy? Sorry, McKercher. Do they float these guys through, and is it those two that are the established guns? And if he is, then 76 points, you know, that's potentially even 20 points upside.
This is my prediction, and I'm no expert, you know, whatever. But I think that he's still in there. You got LDU, Simpkin. Okay, so that's two. Then you'll probably have Wardlaw with a little bit of Taron Thomas, and Will Phillips and Colby McKercher, I reckon, and Will and Tom Powell. Don't even know if he really gets a game or he's forward or wing. So, I mean, Liam Shields, he's not going to be in there. So, I'm predicting he's still got a role in midfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the big one that you missed there, Harmy, that'll go through there more is Sheasel. I think he's had his apprenticeship year. I think, just looking at it from this point, I think it's pretty perfect that McKercher gets to pretty much slot into what Sheasel did last year, and they will want him to be more damaging through the midfield and through half forward, a bit like what Dacos did this year in the second half. So I think my worry with Simpkin is he's definitely value. I can't see him going 77 again. Those, like you said, those injuries definitely played a role. But I think, as Dossie was saying, when he went back-to-back 95s, it was him and LDU and that was essentially it, whereas I think they're going to bring a lot of this young talent through. And I think he'll be in there, but I think it might be a bit more of like a 60%, 40% forward split where he plays a little bit more forward. And because of that, I think, you know, he might top out at maybe a low 90s or a high 80s sort of average, because he has potential to score. We've seen it, but he's a bit up and down like a yo-yo. There was a big point throughout the season where he was still getting 80% plus CBAs and he was putting up 60s and 70s. He has that floor, and that's what's a bit worrying about Simpkin, I think.
I've always been scared to own him. He's a guy that – he's one of those guys you're scared to own, scared not to own, because like you said, he's got the ceiling, but he's also got that floor. I remember one year, I think he just got tagged to absolute shreds as well. Like he's able to be tagged, whereas I feel like LDU can fight through a tag. So if there are teams – I don't know. I'm going to get on to my surprisingly potty pod, and I'm going to go – I actually just want to quickly touch on a guy. I won't spend too much time because he doesn't technically fit the mold, but Rory Laird, just over 10%. So I just want to say just over 10%, a smidge, priced at 109, 22 games last year. I feel like we all know he was a little bit unders. People that started him last year would have been absolutely devastated when he kind of started pretty slow. Finished 114 in his last five, 118 in his last three, and we know what Rory Laird can do. I won't go any more than that. I think it's just a little surprising that he's not more heavily owned, particularly without the without the early bye. He's got a few friendly matchups early, starts with Gold Coast as well, although I know he struggled on up in Gold Coast last year, was one of his poorer games. The other surprisingly potty pod for me, and I think this guy mainly just because entering that third-year breakout, priced at 66 in a team that has a very friendly early draw. I'm talking about Port Adelaide again, another guy from Port. So whereas Louis and a few and maybe even Holmesy are keen on Wines, I'm keen on the young guy coming through, and that is Jason Horne-Francis. Spending more time in the midfield this year, I think he's the guy that's just going to spend more time in the midfield. Coming into his third year, had full 22 games under his belt last year. There's something about those Trav Boak nurturing videos, watching him spend some time with Trav Boak, the Jet, in the off season. I'm loving seeing some of that. That's the sort of material I need from someone like a Paddy Dow coming out of the Saints. But Jason Horne-Francis for me as a midfielder, low ownership at this time of year, 4.84%. Only 58% of centre bounces last year. For me, there's room to grow there. I think he pushes up and mixes it with Butters and Rosie as the leading kind of... They're the top three at that club.
So, no, would you say 66 he's priced at?
He is priced at 66.
It's a bit of an awkward spot, that, isn't it? That's the thing.
I just think he's ready to explode, Horne-Francis. Now, I do admit he's probably more of your super coach player, definitely more of a class over accumulation, but I just think at 66, like he's going 80 plus and probably pushing 90 plus this year. So it's Dossie's big call. I'm getting two shake of the heads. It's a no from those two. I think it's Rosie Butters and Horne-Francis. I don't think personally that Wines is going to take some massive step up. I think it's going to be Horne-Francis that takes a big step up and becomes that established gun. So seems like the other two aren't on board, but look, let's watch those points of difference numbers rise. This is the December edition. I think we do another edition of this right before round one and just have a look at the points of difference heading closer to the season. Holmes, did you have any more in this category, the surprisingly potty pods?
I think mine probably fit into the next category, Dossie, the sort of the ones that we're not talking about, but Harmy's got his hand up from the notebook. I'm sure he's got about 50 of them. So what do you got for us, Harmy?
Yep.
Yeah, I just had two I thought I'd touch on. I got, let's have a look, Elijah Hewitt from West Coast, even though he is not training fully at the moment, something with his foot, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. But priced at 46, he had a number of sub-affected games last year, 5.4% ownership. And I've also had a look at Connor McDonald for the Hawks, and he's priced at 71. He had two sub-affected games, 0.6% ownership available as a forward. So I don't think he's going in the midfield, but he's got a pretty good scoring pedigree.
I'm going one more and I won't also touch on it too much. I don't think it's that surprising, as we've said, surprisingly potty-potty. And this is just because Gold Coast. He's got the second bye, round three bye. So Will Powell from the Gold Coast Suns. I just love Will Power this year. He's up there for me. I think if he does have a massive opening round, I might even still just pick him for those couple of cash rises, because I think he's going to be in the mix for the top sort of three or four defenders in the whole of AFL fantasy this year. Under Damien Hardwick, we know what he's like in terms of liking that slingshot footy. Use Jaden Short in that role. Use Basher Hooley in that role before him. And Will Power, I think, fits the role as your perfect user in the back line for the Suns. I think he's certainly in for a big year. Very lowly owned, 82 price point as well. I think he also was injury affected last year, but full preseason, I think, coming up for Will Power as well. All right, let's get into the last category of pods that we have here. And these are the ones under the radar. Under the radar points of difference. Players that you've got your eye on who aren't in the mainstream. We probably snuck a few in across the podcast so far, but let's touch on the guys under the radar. I'm interested to hear your first one here, Holmesy.
Yeah, so this guy, he has moved to a new club for opportunity. He's priced at 50, and that's James Jordan. So the good thing about James Jordan is having that playing round zero, we're going to get a good look at what his role is, not in a preseason game, but in a proper AFL game. And I don't think he would have moved to Sydney if they hadn't have promised him some kind of opportunity. We know that Errol has one wing sewn up, so Maybe there's a wing role there for him. Maybe there's a bit of inside time with Callum Mills having a delayed start with all his issues. And we've seen a bit of like a Rowbottom go out a little bit recently. Priced at 50, we really need him. You know, 70 plus is an okay average from him. And anything sort of above 75, pushing towards 80, is going to be a smash pick. And we've got the evidence there. He's had 2 years at 70. His first and second year, and then last year he was in the sub vest a lot, falling out of favour in that side. So, you know, 2 years at 70, we see what Sydney do. They nurture their players. They have a very good culture up there. And if, you know, if, as a forward, once again, with the lack of options we have, I'm actually quite interested in a James Jordan. And like I said, we get a really good look at him. So, as always, you know, we're pretty much going to have to wait till round zero to see whether or not he's going to be worth picking. But I think at this point in the preseason, he's someone that you can put in there, help your structure, and then you can kind of pivot down or up without changing too much if the role doesn't come to fruition come round zero.
And we had a bit of a chat about this pre-pod, Harmy. Let's hear your thoughts on James Jordan, obviously with the caveat. Holmesy has said, I mean, it is a bit of a cheat pod because you do get a look at him. So, you know, if he plays well, he's not going to be a pod. But at the moment, would you consider James Jordan as a starting pick for yourself?
I've considered it. He's sort of been in and out of my plans. I'm growing less keen on it, I think. I think that the opportunity that he's been, well, promised, but, you know, given by Sydney is actually playing, because if you have a look at his games last year, he played 10 games where he wasn't the sub, and he played about another 10 where he was subbed. So I think he just wanted to actually have a decent run at it, and I think that it's going to be on the wing, because I've had a look at the midfielders for Sydney, and I reckon he's like 7th or 8th in line sort of thing. I'm not sure whether he's really going to get a pinch hit in there.
Rattle off a few there,
Sorry?
Rattle off a few. I think it's interesting when you do look at who's there and sort of established name.
Okay. I reckon the one that has gone there to play inside mid is Adams. I think he'll be playing in the inside role. I think that they love Rowbottom. He'll be in there. Warner is a burst of pace. They'll need him through there. I think Parker still plays in the midfield. I think that they like Gordon running through there at times. They like Tom Papley. They do, like, he actually has quite a high proportion of CBAs. So I'm up to 6 so far before we even look at, well, Callum Mills, but I reckon he's going back. Rowbottom, and then you don't even look at Roberts and Sheldrick sort of thing. So I just feel like he's a bit far down in the pecking order.
Yeah, it's fair. It's a few names there, Holmesy, but at the same time, like you said, it's a cheat code. We get opening round. We can chuck him in our teams if he does have that established role, and I think that's your point anyway. Harmy, who's your first name here under the radar?
All right. Again, somebody who has changed clubs, averaged 103 in the VFL last season, available as a defender, priced at 34, 1.3% ownership, Marty Hoare. I was really surprised at how low his ownership was. I've actually been pretty keen on him the whole time.
Yep, Holmesy nodding your head as well, mate. It's a podcast. Need to open the mouth there.
Yeah, Harmy, well, I was actually going to look to put him in this section as well, but I'm glad you did. So, yeah, he's been in my team since the game opened. I was chatting to one of my mates the other day who is a Melbourne supporter, and he's a little bit cagey about if he's actually going to play or not. But in my head, it's AFL clubs don't give lifelines to this age of a player unless they have a role for them. I think they always tend to draft the youth, thinking that they can develop them, and these type of players don't generally get a look in. So he had that 1 year, 2019, where he averaged 60. So there's evidence there. He can go at 60. That's not an issue. Priced at 34, and with how Melbourne's looking, I think if he can get a role in that back line playing as that sort of intercept running, or not running, but sort of intercept player, I think there's definitely scope for 60 plus. And at 34, that's what we're after. We need a best 22 player that we don't have to worry about. So I am definitely interested in Marty Hoare. So that's nice that we're on the same wavelength there.
Yep, super cheap. Coming in, mature age player. If he's named round one, he's certainly one to to look at, and definitely one to keep that eye on that role. I think we saw, I mean, I don't know if it's probably not the same role, but like Michael Hibberd now out of the picture, he still played, I think, 10 to 12 games last year. Like there's a few spots still up for grabs in the defense in Melbourne. And I think the biggest thing though is where, you know, guys like Gus Brayshaw, if he does move up the ground and if other players or even Trent Rivers were spending a little bit more time inside next year, if he is one that they've got pegged in to spend a bit more time inside, then it opens up the defense. Because otherwise the defense is pretty loaded at Melbourne. But yeah.
The defense is loaded. Jake Bowie played 21 games.
Exactly.
Bowie!
Because he's a gun. So my first under the radar pod, Jake Bowie at 0.13%. 562,000, an absolute bargain. I did actually have him in there, but I was going to do it as a bit of a joke later. But I love Jake Bowie this year, but probably for draft. I wouldn't start him in Classic. I've learned my mistakes from the past. Don't worry. I think, and this guy to me, my first player, could have been in the surprisingly potty pods, honestly, because I'm shocked at how low his ownership is at this point in time. And I wish I had the port expert on to discuss this guy further, and maybe you guys can tell me if he's out with a season-ending injury, because why else would Jordan Sweet be at 4.3% ownership at $387,000 in our ruck line? I think it's amazingly low and completely under the radar. I think because Ivan Soldo went there, people have got completely scared off. But we've seen Port for the last how long under Ken run just a single ruck setup. They haven't looking like running two. We've got Scott Lysette retiring. They've just brought in Jordan Sweet, 25 years old, in that sweet spot. The only pardon the pun.
Nice, Dossie.
But only not getting a game because he's behind the best ruck arguably in the entire AFL. No other reason, no sort of injuries to his name. Played in the VFL last year. I wonder what I'll have to check out his numbers in the VFL, but one of the best ruckmen in the VFL as well when he's playing there. I'll just have a quick look. Jordan Sweet, 43 hitouts, 14 disposals, 104 points in the VFL average off his 19 games, you know, played a full season in there. We've already seen Ivan Soldo actually have some finger surgery in the preseason. The guy is constantly injured anyway. I just think it's Sweet's role. And at 387,000, even like at minimum on your bench, at minimum, he's going to make you
that's
a
my question.
Stack of coin.
You're going to be R2 or R3?
For me, I honestly reshuffled. I've already done a few reshuffles, but I've reshuffled to R2. I just think, look, if you want the big dog captain in Tim English, everyone's got Grundy at R2, but if we have an R3 that's a 200K-er, or, you know, hopefully we do, but Jordan Sweet's minimum R3 for me, like 380.
The issue is if he gets injured. If you've got him in R2 and he gets injured, you've got to actually cash out somebody else to get the money to correct it. So I had him at R3 for quite a while, yep. But now it just felt like it was too much money sitting on the bench, 380,000. It's a big difference, and I wouldn't do it in any other line. So I just sort of looked at it and thought, if I can get two rucks that I'm comfortable that will be consistently playing at a high level, then the R3 suite doesn't really fit.
I am on the fence about whether we can start a 380K ruckman on the bench, Harmy. I think the caveat is we've got to have a look and see at all of the options. But if there is no 200K rucks, and then there is, you know, I know that you're talking up a Nathan Kruger that you could potentially get there, but yeah, we know you love him, Harmy. Don't shake your head, mate.
I was only joking with that.
Oh yeah, right. You know, if he's the option and people are too scared to go there because 380K is too much to put on the bench, that could potentially be 200, 300, 400K, or maybe not 400, that you're making on the rest of the comp purely because they're too scared to put that money on the bench. And he will play in round 5 when Grundy is injured. So that's another leg up as well where he's going to play when Grundy has the bye. So I'll definitely look at it if he's the solo ruck. I don't think I'm going to play him at R2. I've learnt that in the past where you can kind of get stuck if you've got other forced trades that week as well and you can't get him out. But Look, you can disagree, Dossie, that's fine, but yeah. I would definitely look at him at R3, put it that way, if he's named.
I think the cheap rucks, though, the last couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to think back, but like they've been like dominating for us. Like a guy like Briggs, for instance, coming in, or I can't remember if it was the year before, but like we've had guys at this price range that have basically been the winning picks in the ruck line lately.
Well, hold on. The guy that won last year started with Marshall and English. So the most recent form is that it's not a winning pick.
Yeah, Briggs was the outlier. But just imagine if he gets injured like he has all of the time, where it's a different conversation. So those coaches took it on and it was fantastic for them, well played. But in a different world, if that ruckman gets injured, like Harmy said, you're in no man's land and you are trying to go down on a midfield premium to get up to, you know, good luck getting up to English from that price point. So then once again, you're going to another mid-price/underpriced ruck, and then, you know, who knows, 2, 3, 4 trades in the ruck and you've kind of gone nowhere. So that's the risk with a sweet R2. Yep. But if coaches take it on and it works, then they have a good leg up. So that's the risk versus reward in AFL fantasy that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, I love it. I just think it, to me, you know, as I said, could fit under the surprisingly potty pods. I'm just shocked that there's not more people selecting the bloke at this point in time, given the price tag. But it's clearly a point of discussion going forward. Holmesy, do you have another player for us?
I'll talk about one of my Freo boys, and that is Heath Chapman. So priced at 54, a little bit awkward, as Harmy would say. He's not super cheap. But priced at 54, all I know is that this player is an absolute gun. So he has all the talent in the world. Freo are very high on him, and he's had a couple of injury-affected years, as a lot of these players with value have. We know, well, we're speculating at this point in time that Hayden Young is going to move into the midfield, which opens up a ball-winning spot on the halfback flank. We know that there's vacant wing roles as well, and I think he's earmarked for either one of those. So off the halfback or on the wing. Once again, preseason watch, but I think there's definite value there, and I know Freo love him. So he's someone I'm just monitoring at this stage, and he definitely helps that structure back there. I'm not sure what his ceiling could be. That's the caveat there, and you would really need him from a 54 price tag to be pushing 80, which is a big ask, but you know, there's a fair bit of ball to be won back there with Hayden Young moving into the midfield. So it's one I'm watching pretty keenly at this stage in the preseason, yep. Especially with Freo playing that chip style.
Except he's also moving into the midfield, as you've just earmarked there. I think the latest articles I'm looking up on him, I just looked up just in case he was injured, because it seems to be his go-to, unfortunately, in the early parts of his career. But the latest on Heath Chapman is that Hayden Young has already made the move. Now Heath Chapman is set to join the Freo midfield next year. So as you said, if that could be the Liam Henry replacement on the wing, that is pretty juicy from his perspective. I love Heath Chapman as well, Holmesy. I think that's a great call. He's in the price bracket you're kind of looking at for a bargain defender as well, and similar price to a Jack Bowes. And I'd say Heath Chapman has showed that he's a classy prop step above a Jack Bowes in terms of class. Harmy, you've got some thoughts on him as well.
Yeah, I do like Chapman available as a defender. I guess my point is, with Freo's midfield, you got Brayshaw, Sorong, and Young now. Okay, so three. Who else is playing in there? So last year we saw a bit of Jaeger. Not sure really how effective he was. Nat Fyfe, well, maybe a little bit of a pinch, but he's not going to be a regular. So then you go to other people. I'm not sure about Will Brody. Not sure if he's coming back, Dossie. But then you go to Matt Johnson and Neil Erasmus. And Erasmus, if he got a run in that midfield, he's a guy that was a good junior scorer. He is priced at 51, 0.8% ownership. Had 7 games last year where he was a sub, but when he did get CBAs, he actually scored really well. In one game, he hit 115. So he's somebody that could be interesting.
Yeah, the opportunity's there, Harmy. I worry about that, though, being that M4, M5 player, especially where, you know, we're banking on, you know, Brayshaw pretty much doing what he's going to do. You'd think he's going to be around the 110 mark. you'd think Sarong's going to be around that sort of mark as well. And if we're banking on Hayden Young to sort of push 95, 100, there's only so much ball to go around. Like, you'd need him to go 75, close to 80, which potentially he can. But that would just be my worry. Worry on role each week as well, being the sub. But there's definitely an opportunity there. I don't think Jagger O'Meara is long for the midfield for too much longer. Like you said, he didn't offer very much. But they do need that point of difference in there, which I think will be Young this year. I think he offers something different to Brayshaw and Sarong.
And I think that's been... And, sorry, that I think... I think the Hayden Young spanner in the works just got thrown in there a bit sooner than we probably thought too. Like, I think he was doing so well off the back line that it's probably come a lot sooner than maybe even the Dockers thought as well in their plans and in their draft strategy, getting these guys that they thought could sort of enter that midfield mix. Sorry, Harmy, go ahead, mate.
All I was going to say was, when Paddy Dow doesn't get named round one, he could be a straight swap to Erasmus at the same price point, Dossie.
Come on, mate. So that's all you wanted to jump in for. Absolute garbage from me. All right. Well, Harmy, do you have a couple of names? Do you want to just rattle off who you've got left on your list there?
No, that's pretty much it. I think we touched on everybody at different points throughout the podcast. So that was all from me.
All right. Well, it'd be remiss for me not to mention this guy's name, especially Louis, knowing that he's Louis's boy. I won't try and claim him as mine. I wish I could, because I'm such a fan after seeing how well he's established himself. But another guy in that similar kind of price bracket, could we see a big second year breakout from the new number 23 at Hawthorn, Josh Weddle? I think this guy's going to be a superstar. So let's just wait and see on that. I don't want to go too much into that. Let's wait for Louis to kind of really touch on how he can establish himself. But I feel like Josh Weddle's just made of a star. He's got the pace to burn that they need, that Hawthorn desperately need. And he could play a variety of roles in that Hawthorn team. I just think they want the ball in his hands next year, Holmesy.
Yeah, I was just going to give one more, Dossie, just because I just thought of it. But as fantasy coaches, we tend to overthink things a little bit, and we put our minds in knots thinking about all this and all that. But Matt Crouch at 9.5%, priced in the low 80s, came in for 6 games at the end of the year. Harmy shaking his head once again. I don't think we've agreed on this whole entire podcast. Average 98 from a low 80s price point, and then they've given him 2 years. So I think he is definitely in their plans. I think they probably liked the fact that he could come in and play that role and actually release Jordan Dawson a little bit. I think Adelaide kind of showed last year that they liked having these Matt Crouch, Ben Keys types coming in so that Rory Laird and Jordan Dawson didn't have to do as much of the heavy lifting. And I think if Crouch is there round one, which I fully believe that he will, I think he's underpriced, and we know he's going to be in that midfield because that's the role that he plays. So I just think... Yeah, 6 games last year, an average of 98. I don't think he's going to push 100. I think he might be closer to that 95. But I think with that no opening buy, the fact he's going to play priced in the low 80s, I think he's someone we look at as well and don't overthink.
Harmy, jump in, mate. What's the counter?
Yeah, well, I like Dawson and I like Laird. I think they are a really strong two in that Adelaide midfield. But from there, I'm actually not sure how they set up. So you got Joshua Shelley, you got Jack Soligo, Matt Crouch, who's very different to those two because he's certainly not as quick. Then you got Ben Keys and Rory Sloan, who aren't really getting the game. Schoenberg's injured, so I'm not sure how they're going to set up, but he's not going to play a key role. That's probably the point I'm trying to get to.
Well, I think he does, Harmy. I think Rory Sloan actually last year was the third highest CBA attender across the year on average, or pretty close to it. Let me just get the numbers up real quick because it actually surprised me when I went through the numbers. Not quite. So he still had 32%, but there was games through the middle there where he was getting high 50s and he kind of went out of it towards the end when Crouch came in. So I think there's a role there for him. I think Rochelle, you are right, Rochelle, Rankin and Soligo offer something different, but they're your more, think of your Zach Bailey types from Brisbane that go in there for 20 or 30% just for a little bit of X factor when the other guys will do the heavy lifting. So Matt Crouch, I'm looking at, Harmy. You don't have to log in and put him in your team, but I'm looking at him.
I reckon in 2 years' time, Rochelli could be just about the best of the lot of them. Rankin's up forward, and he's not really going to be in the midfield. I think he's probably the one that they should be investing time into. But, yeah, I guess we'll see.
Have you seen the shredded photo as well this preseason, Harmy? Nah. Went off in Adelaide.
Did Lou send it to you? He's been watching X a fair bit for those photos.
Just have a look. Have a look at the Josh Rochelli. Have a little search on the socials after this, Harmy. Before we wrap up, and we should wrap up, we've been going for an hour now. Just obviously trying to get away from the family this holiday season there, boys. But who do you think, if we look at, we quickly jump on the app or wherever you're looking at there, boys, and go the selected buy and switch the percentages around, do any surprise you that are the high ownership players at this time of year that you think maybe a little bit too high? And while you're thinking about it, I'll go with a Brody Grundy. I think that's a little high. I know why. But I think, you know, given the options that there are in the ruck this year, 52% early, showing people still believe he's the player he used to be. Obviously, at Sydney, different situation, but that's fair enough. We've got Sam Flanders, 45%, despite the round three buy. That's probably one where obviously I'm keen on a Sam Flanders coming in, and the lack of forward options probably forcing people's hand here. But 45% when he's got a buy in round three. You'd want a massive score in the opening round before our round one game to be picking him. So any other players that sort of stand out to you, Harmy?
Yeah, there's a couple that really just spring to mind before I even look at it, mate, that people have been pumping up the whole time and I've been less keen on. Nick Dacos, the early buy and Hawks game, I'm just not sure there's much value there at the minute.
57% owned for those playing at home. Second most owned player behind Harley Reid, who's probably under-owned at this point at 66% coming from a West Coast fan, my man.
The hope, and the other one is the other one is Kitty Coleman. I think people are thinking what happened in the first half of that grand final and trying to sell themselves that Daniel Rich isn't playing anymore. Well, Daniel Rich didn't play last year. And Kitty Coleman was playing the same role the entire year last year. So I'm not convinced that there's the value that some other people are talking up around him.
That's interesting. I was an owner towards the back end of last year, actually, of Kitty Coleman. Did come home strong, 89 in his last five as well last year before having that amazing grand final. But he is a hot and cold player. He can go. It's sort of just very much dependent on the day as to whether Kitty's going to be firing or not. Holmesy, but yeah, have you got any players that stand out to you? Because yeah, that's a massive ownership for Coleman. He's at what's he at, 20, nearly 30% already at this point in time. And as we've mentioned again, the buyer's playing a factor, has the round two buy, so you only get one game out of him, and he's having a buy. Holmesy.
Yeah, the only one I'll throw in, and I mean, in a perfect world, this guy is monster value, but Zach Williams, the one thing that Zach Williams has always struggled with is in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years is his fitness, and he's coming back from an ACL. He's not going to be in full training until mid to late January. Harmy, we're on YouTube, mate. You can't give the be quiet symbol when we're actually being videoed. But I can't believe the hype on him. He coming back from an ACL, typically these injuries are very hard to come back from, and he's always been an injury-prone player. So I can understand putting him in at this time of the preseason. It's easy to sort of pivot across to another mid-pricer if one sort of arises. But, yeah, I'm not keen to start Zach Williams. Even with the buy in round two, I'd be more than happy to watch him in round zero and round one and make sure that he gets through, and then maybe pick him in round three or four, you know, at 10 points per game higher, because he'll still be value then if he does show us that he's back to full fitness. But yeah, I'm not keen on Zach Williams.
I'm with you there. One last one, and we've got a Bombers man on the show, so I can ask him this. Elijah Sardis, I might be one of his biggest fans out there, but he's $476,000 in AFL Fantasy Classic. He's at 12.34% ownership, which at this time of year, looking at it, he's around the same ownership as a Luke Davies Uniac, a Jordan Dawson. He's not rookie priced, which, like, if he was rookie priced, I'd be not surprised. But 12% ownership at this time of year, mate, what's going on down at Bomberland? Is there something in the water for Sardis to have that second year breakout? As I said, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he's a very good player. He started slow last year. I think he had he got injured in the preseason. So he had an injury interrupted season. I think there's definitely upside there. It's a matter of how much upside you think that there's going to be. In his junior comps, he was always a really high scorer, regardless of where he played. So I think there's potential, but I think it's maybe the price point and the lack of forward premiums status. Do you have any mid-price forwards that you prefer, Dossie, that you can think of?
I've got a few names, but now I sort of compare his price. Maybe it's not as surprising, but I had guys in this pod that I sort of didn't mention because we were kind of running out of time. But like, he's 200K more. 400. Nah, I'd have to look. I was thinking like a Mitch Owens, but he's like 200K more. That kind of makes sense. He averaged 64 last year, did Sardis off four games, so he's also got the discount factored in. Honestly, I'm not going to lie. When I saw that, I didn't realize he had the mid-forward status, and we probably, you know, you'd hope that he does play a bit more midfield this year. Was
electric. I'm with you, Dossie. I'm with you. I mean, Harmy's more than happy to do this on the players that I rattle off. So that Essendon midfield, you've got Merritt, Parrish, Dylan Shields still around, like he's injured, but he plays midfield, he does. You've got Setterfield, you've got Hobbs they put time into, you've got Caldwell, like they run deep in the midfield. If Sardis plays, maybe he gets a little pinch hit, but he's playing on the half forward line and he's destined for a 70 average. So I'm not there at the moment.
Yeah, I can't really see him going inside. They also like Archie Perkins too, Holmesy. So yeah. I mean, and then on the wings we've got Nick Martin and Durham. Like, it's, I feel he's going to be in the forward line quite a bit this season.
Yep. Oh, Dossie pointing out some solid players here. So he's done all right this podcast. All right. Well, let's wrap it up then. I think that's a pretty solid holiday podcast for all your fantasy needs, just to keep you nice and satiated in the holiday season with a bit of fantasy content. We thought we'd pop on. Thanks, guys, for jumping on, Holmesy and Harmy. Hope you have a good new year, boys. We'll be back in the new year, but have a fantastic new year. And don't forget to check out all the reactions from Holmesy and Harmy, all the head shakes, all the gasps on the YouTube channel. Just search up Pod. You'll find us on there. Make sure you subscribe to whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We really appreciate any 5-star reviews at this time of year, especially on your Spotify's or your Apple's or wherever you'd listen. But hope you have a safe and happy holiday season, and we'll see you in the new year. Good luck with your team tinkering over the break. Fare thee well.